is Radio Havana, Cuba, broadcasting from Cuba, free territory of the Americas.
We're broadcasting in English on shortwave and real audio online at www.radiohc.cu.
And welcome to Radio Havana, Cuba's English language broadcast for this Thursday, June the 11th. Mostly sunny skies, warm temperatures here in the Cuban capital, rather steamy and sticky day here in the Cuban capital. I'm Ed Newman. With me here in the air-conditioned comfort of our studios, Lena Valverde and Gerwin Jones. We invite you to stay with us. We'll have news from Cuba and around the world. We'll have our regular Thursday features, The Real Story, and our economic report in the second half hour of our program. On this date in history, in 1959, Raul Roa was named as Cuba's Minister of Foreign Affairs. Raul Roa was the Cuban Revolution's top diplomat for many years, serving until 1976, and he was honored with the title of Canciller de la Dignidad, the Foreign Minister of Dignity. Raul Roa died at the age of 75 in Havana in 1982. He was given the title of Foreign Minister of Cuba 56 years ago today. Also on this date, but in 2012, Teofilo Stevenson died here in Havana. Stevenson was a heavyweight boxer, one of only three boxers in the world to win three Olympic gold medals, along with Felix Salón, also a Cuban boxer. Teofilo Stevenson died on this date at the age of 60, 3 years ago today. Let's go over now to the news desk, find out what's happening today in our national and international news with Lena and Gerwin.
Thanks, Ed. Let's first take a look at today's headlines. CELAC and EU member countries demand lifting of U.S. blockade of Cuba.
Cuban medical brigade returns from Chile.
Aggressive Ecuadorian right-wing protesters attack pro-government demonstrators.
White House authorizes sending 450 more troops to Iraq.
And now the news in detail. The European Union joined Latin America and the Caribbean in calling for the United States to lift its decades-old economic blockade of Cuba, as leaders of the three regions ended a two-day summit in Brussels. Top officials from the nations making up the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, CELAC, and the European Union also welcomed the recent efforts by Cuba and the United States to re-establish diplomatic relations. In this context, we expect all necessary steps to be taken towards an early end to the blockade, the EU and Latin American nations said in a joint statement. The sanctions have had undue humanitarian consequences for the Cuban people and are damaging to the legitimate development of economic ties between Cuba, the European Union and other countries. The EU and Cuba are scheduled to hold another round of talks in Brussels next week in a bid to normalize their own strained relations.
European, Latin American and Caribbean countries have vowed to help secure a global deal in Paris to curb climate change. In Brussels, leaders from the 28 EU countries and 33 Latin American and Caribbean nations in the CELAC bloc also pledged to work together to achieve a legally binding global climate agreement that is needed to keep global warming below 2 degrees Celsius or 1.5 degrees Celsius when they joined the global summit in Paris in November. The lower figure was apparently put in by the Caribbean island nations that fear rising sea levels blamed on global warming. According to AFP, negotiations coalesce around the goal of limiting global warming to 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit over pre-industrial revolution levels. This is a figure scientists say offers a good chance of avoiding catastrophic damage to Earth's climate system and a future darkening by overworsting drought, flood, storms and rising seas. In a bid to deepen investment and trade links with the region, European Commission head Jean-Claude Juncker said Brussels announced during the recently concluded CELAC EU summit a total of more than 800 million euros, that's $900 million, in support for the 33 nations.
Han Hundreds of opposition and pro-government protesters took to the streets of Quito on Wednesday evening, staging two high-tension parallel demonstrations in the central Chiris Avenue, which as night fell began to turn violent. The TV network Telesur witnessed bottles being thrown at supporters of the Rafael Correa government, and former culture minister Paco Velasco was bleeding from the head after being struck. The pro-government demonstrators gathered in front of the headquarters of the governing party Alianza País around 4 p.m. local time, blocking the opposition protesters from reaching that point. Meanwhile, opposition activists arriving at around 5 p.m. carried black flags in what they claimed was a symbolic gesture to show their mourning. The opposition demonstrators encircled both ends of the demonstration area in which the pro-government demonstrators had gathered, fencing them and yelling obscenities when they tried to get out.
U.S. President Barack Obama has authorized the deployment of hundreds of additional troops to Iraq in an effort to advise and train local forces to regain areas lost to ISIL Takfiri terrorists. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said in a statement on Wednesday afternoon that Obama ordered to send up to 450 additional military personnel to Iraq at the request of the Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi. Obama met Abadi on the margins of the G7 summit in Germany earlier this week. Under the plan, the number of U.S. training sites in Iraq would increase from 4 to 5. U.S. forces are currently stationed at the Al-Assad military base in western Anbar, but the new base is closer to Ramadi in the eastern part of the province. And you've tuned to the news here on Radio Havana, Cuba for this Thursday. Thanks for joining us on the International Shortwave Radio Frequencies of RHC. Radio Havana, Cuba. We're also on the FM dial if you're here in Havana at 102.5 FM. Let's go back now over to the news desk with Lena Bobet.
The Cuban medical brigade that went to Chile to assist those affected by recent heavy rains and flooding have arrived back in Havana with satisfaction and the recognition of the Chilean people and government. At the welcome ceremony at the José Martí International Airport, Dr. Marcia Cobas, Deputy Minister of Health, highlighted the excellent work of the 15 brigade members who gave their unconditional support to the people of Atacama, one of the areas most affected by the floods of last April. The Cuban Deputy Minister of Health also praised the work that Cuban doctors and paramedics are doing in Nepal to assist thousands of people affected by the massive earthquake 2 months ago that devastated the small Asian nation. Carlos Perez Diaz, head of the Cuban Medical Brigade that returned from Chile, highlighted the catastrophic situation in the country and the joint work of Cuban professionals with medical graduates of the Latin American School of Medicine.
At the United Nations, Cuba highlighted the national social inclusion policies for people affected by physical, mental, and sensory limitations. During a forum at the United Nations, Oscar Leon, Cuba's alternative UN ambassador, said the Caribbean nation shows progress in treating the disabled despite economic constraints. Regarding the actions in Cuba to support the disabled, Leon referred to the implementation of a strategy based on freedom, equity, and social justice and inclusion. He said that there are three national plans which have been developed since 1995. Cuba's alternate representative to the United Nations said that the project has a medical, prophylactic, educational, and socio-legal approach in order to promote physical rehabilitation, learning, potential development, and social integration of people with limitations. He also referred to the experience of Cuba, where there are more than 300 special education schools.
Guatemalan President Otto Pérez Molina is being investigated by the country's Congress, and in the next few days he will decide whether to strip him of his immunity from prosecution to face a possible trial over corruption scandals that have caused massive protests demanding his resignation, the Supreme Court announced on Wednesday. Opposition lawmaker Almir Karpov presented a motion that in the case of being granted would be unprecedented in the modern history of the Central American country, and when the approval came through, he said, "I always maintain by faith, my faith, that Congress would do the right thing." Luis Rabe, President of Congress, said that the commission would be formed as early as Thursday, and in the following days, it would be up to them to investigate the President and decide on his immunity. The presidential spokesman, Jorge Ortega, responded to the news saying, "This is a legal procedure. We will await Congress's resolution."
ISIL-attacked Yemeni terrorists have blown up a pipeline carrying gas from eastern Syria to the capital, Damascus, a UK-based monitoring group has said. The Takfiri militants blew up the pipeline, which ran close to the T4 military airport in the east of central Homs province, the so-called Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said on Wednesday. This pipeline was used to carry gas into the suburbs of Damascus and Homs to generate electricity and provide heating in individual homes, said Rami Abdel Rahman, the head of the monitoring group. The militants have taken over a number of gas and oil fields in Homs, the most recent of which was during their attack on the ancient Syrian city of Palmyra that fell into the hands of ISIL militants in May. According to Turkey's Emergency Management Agency, over the past week at least 6,000 Syrians have fled over the border into Turkey to distance themselves from clashes between ISIL militants and Kurdish forces near the northern Syrian city of Tel Abyad.
And those are some of the national and international stories we're following for you here on Radio Havana, Cuba, for this Thursday, June the 11th. Once again, our headlines: CELAC and EU member countries demand lifting of U.S. blockade of Cuba.
Cuban medical brigade returns from Chile.
Aggressive Ecuadorian right-wing protesters attack pro-government demonstrators.
White House authorizes sending 450 more troops to Iraq. Thanks, Lena and Gerwin. Coming up on about 14 minutes past the hour, you tune to Radio Havana, Cuba. We're streaming real audio online on our website. All you have to do is go to www.radiohc.cu. That's our website here at Radio Havana, Cuba. www.radiohc.cu. Let's go over now to the editorial desk. There we find Gerwin Jones. He has our commentary viewpoint for today. Mr. Jones?
It is plumb crazy that in a planet where the efforts to solve the problem created by hunger are insufficient, and millions of people suffer from the lack of nutrients, vast quantities of foodstuffs are being thrown away every day. Food that would solve the estimated needs of at least one-third of the hungry people in the world. In a 2012 estimate, nearly 100 million tons of food were wasted annually in the European Union alone. If nothing is done, food waste in the EU could rise to over 120 million tons by 2020. Now multiply that figure by 10 to get the idea globally. You've got it. A huge quantity of all the food produced globally for human consumption is lost or wasted. Around 1.3 billion tons every year. Food loss and waste in industrial countries are as high as in developing countries, but their distribution is different. In developing countries, over 40% of food losses happen after harvest and during processing. In industrial countries, over 40% occurs at retail and consumer level. These revelations were made known by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, that claims that technical problems and incorrect political decisions apply to the entities that control the food markets with scant regard for humanitarian concerns. According to the FAO, one of the main culprits in the industrialized countries where foodstuffs are thrown away are the distribution chains of the large business concerns that control the market. The FAO points to the storing and transport methods used in the handling of foodstuffs as responsible for at least 40% of the losses of greens, fruits, and edible roots, along with 30% of fish, 30% of the cereals, and 20% of oil-yielding seeds, milk, and milk products.
Again, in the richest nations of the world, the loss of foodstuffs is also due to the hiking of prices to be paid by consumers. The United Nations Environmental Programme recently confirmed that in the scramble to produce more food, inappropriate methods are being used in agriculture, such as immoderate deforestation and the indiscriminate use of insecticides and defoliants that seriously deteriorate the environment and contribute to climate change, a reality that is today adversely affecting billions of human beings around the world. The FAO's Director General, José Graziano da Silva, has asked for a new approach to the intensive use of agricultural inputs and to apply instead technologies that allow growers to produce more with less of the same. Wasting food is not only an ethical and economic issue, but also depletes the environment of limited natural resources. All actors in the food chain have a role to play in preventing and reducing food waste, from those who produce and process foods, such as farmers, food manufacturers, and processors, to those who make food available for consumption, distributors, retailers, and ultimately consumers themselves. Remember the old adage, waste not, want not. Radio Vancouver, this has been a commentary by Kevin Jones.
The impact of climate change in the world increases every year. Temperatures rise, rainfall patterns vary, icebergs and snow melt, and average sea level increases.
If we do not act quickly, environment degradation will get worse and cause greater global issues. Climate change, a common challenge to the world.
Almost 19 minutes past the hour, and you tune to Radio Havana, Cuba. If you're lucky enough to be in Havana, you might tune in on the FM dial. We're at 102.5 FM in the Havana area. Well, Mike Morales is up next. He has a report on a meeting of intellectuals from Europe, Latin America, and the Caribbean that took place in Brussels, parallel to the second CELAC EU summit, which concluded today in the Belgian capital. Mike?
The Belgian capital, Brussels, was also the place where hundreds of parliamentarians, political leaders and intellectuals from Europe, Latin America and the Caribbean gathered together these past 2 days to debate present cultural and political issues in today's world. Venezuela was a focal point. Cuban intellectual Abel Prieto, advisor to the president Raúl Castro, participated as a member of the Cuban delegation to the important meeting.
Es muy evidente que el imperio está utilizando todas las armas imaginables.
It is evident that the U.S. empire is trying by all means to destabilize the Bolivarian revolution and create a crisis situation in Venezuela. To this aim, they have even resorted to hire assassins from the drug cartels in Colombia. They have resorted to economic war.
Abel Prieto noted that the mainstream media is a political and ideological tool that serves only the interests of power groups to the detriment of the vast majority of the world population. He then called for coordinated strategies to break away from the prevailing hegemonic policies in the mainstream media.
The first things they do is decide what the general public should learn about and then from what perspective, which is always the perspective, the point of view of the dominant group. Sometimes a truly irrelevant, important piece of news is also merged in the torrent of pointless, meaningless news reports that people never get to learn about it.
The meeting of intellectuals from Europe, Latin America and the Caribbean concluded with a final declaration calling for strengthened friendship relations between peoples on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. For Radio Havana, Cuba, this is Mike Morales.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Morales with that report. Radio Havana, Cuba calls on its listeners to just take a minute to answer these four questions. Do you listen to us on the radio or on the internet? Where are you located? What shows do you listen to? And what would you suggest
to improve our programming.
Once again, do you listen to us on the radio
or on the internet?
Where are you? What shows do you listen to? And what do you suggest to improve our programming here on Radio Havana, Cuba? Send your answers to radiohcenglish@gmail.com. Once again, that's radiohcenglish@gmail.com. Radio Havana, Cuba, your shortwave radio station here in the heart of the Caribbean. Stick and stay and don't go away. Here's Eduardo Gonzalez with our sports report. Time out. Eddie.
And from friends, hitting two home runs in the 10-6 win of his team, the Chivalry Marines beat the Saitama Sable Lions. The Pioneer has the edge, went 5-for-5 to raise his batting average to 2,063, a result of 25 hits in 95 at-bats after 27 games in the main Japanese baseball circuit. Besides the two homers for a total of 6 on the season, the Caribbean slugger drove in 3 runs in the match and has already accumulated 19 RBIs, the second most in his squad. The Chivalry Marines appears fourth in the Pacific League with a negative record of 19 wins and 22 losses, behind Fukuoka with 23-16, Hokkaido 25-18, and Saitama teams with 23-18. Meanwhile, Kevin Frederick Cepeda in the second division with the Yomiuri Giants has a batting average of 279 with 4 homers and 11 RBIs. And his compatriot, Hector Mendoza, has pitched over 5 and 3rd innings with 8 strikeouts and only 2 hits allowed. The Pioneer Cepeda and Mendoza are part of the Cuban baseball pre-selection and are eligible to join the national team and will participate in the Pan American Games in July in the Canadian city of Toronto. The Cuban soccer team drew 0 to Curaçao at the Hergilio Hato National Stadium in the second round of CONCACAF qualifying event for the World Cup Russia 2018. Although it was a later action game by both teams, the athletes of Curaçao had a clear mastery of the ball, spurred by better offensive strategy that demanded constant alertness from the Cuban defense in general. Vidarel Merencia, Endley Martina, and Gianluca Maria highlighted by Curaçao, while Anier Drangard, Alain Cervantes, and Sandy Sanchez stood out for Cuban coach Raul González Tena. The next game will be this Sunday at Havana's Pedro Marrero Stadium, for which Curaçao lost its skillful midfielder, Jairo Mullans, who plays for the Rapid Bucharest club, whom the referee gave a big card. The 2020 Tokyo Olympics will include in its program of competitions male baseball and women's softball, excluded after the 2008 Beijing Olympics, but returning for the great popularity they enjoy in Japan and the availability of facilities. Other sports such as karate and squash also aspire to be included in the program. A final decision on the new disciplines will be made in August 2016. Under the so-called Olympic Agenda 2020, a package of reforms of the International Olympic Committee approved in December, the host cities can propose to add 1 or 2 more sports for their games. For Radio Havana, Cuba, Sport News, I'm Eduardo González.
And you're tuned to Radio Havana, Cuba on a sunny Thursday here in the Cuban capital. Time now for some great Cuban music. Here's the Orquesta Breve. Mi salsa tiene sandunga.
Thank you.
Cuba, that's the Orquesta Reve, and Mi Salsa Tiene Sandunga. And you've tuned to Radio Havana, Cuba. I hope your salsa doesn't have any of that stuff. We're here every day of the week at our website, www.radiohc.cu. Listen to us on Real Audio. Time now for our newscast. Let's go down over to the news desk, and we're joined by Lena and Gerwin.
Cuba and Spain will sign cooperation projects in the area of universities in order to strengthen the ties of academic collaboration between the two countries. During the 12th bilateral meeting of rectors of higher education held in Spain, participants exchanged their experiences in the field of education. José Ramón Sabor, Cuba's Deputy Minister of Higher Education, told reporters in the Spanish Andalusian town of Huelva that Cuba and Spain are working in the areas of graduate and academic mobility, especially in the recognition of credits and degrees, as well as an educational exchange programs. The Cuban Deputy Minister also pointed to cooperation in academic mobility between teachers and students, which he described as very important as well as mutually beneficial cooperation.
Member of the Japanese Parliament, Shinako Tsuchiya, President of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Lower House of Japan's Parliament, expressed her desire to visit Cuba, a wish, she said, is shared by many in the Japanese legislative body. Tsuchiya made the remarks during a meeting in Tokyo this week with Cuba's ambassador to Japan, Marcos Rodriguez. During the meeting, the officials renewed various aspects of relations between the two countries and agreed that there are favorable prospects for their development. They also spoke about the positive results of the historic visit to Havana of Japanese Foreign Minister Fumio Kishida, who'd traveled to the Caribbean island accompanied by a large delegation of business people from that Asian nation.
Court hearings for five colonels were held on Monday in the cities of Bogota and Medellin over the murders of 72 civilians between 2006 and 2007. The colonels were arrested between March and April this year when the hearings against them started. Commander Edgar Avila, Second Commander Jose Sanguna Duarte, as well as heads of operations Diego Padilla, Raúl Huertas, and Carlos Cadena, all belonged to the Pedro Neil Ospina Battalion based in Medellin. The accused colonels allegedly hunted, kidnapped, and murdered vulnerable people, mostly from poor families, in an attempt to plant weapons near their corpses so the soldiers could claim they were guerrilla fighters.
The remains of around 600 soldiers executed by ISIL Takfiri terrorists have been found in Iraq,
in the capital Baghdad.
The remains of 597 Takfiri militants attacked the Spike military base, Human Rights Minister Tiko Hamid al-Baghdadi, in the capital Baghdad on Wednesday. In June 2014, the hostages were mostly lined up in various locations and slaughtered. After government troops freed Tikrit from the hands of the terrorists in April, they found large numbers of remains, mostly buried in shallow mass graves. Officials estimate that 1,700 people were killed by the militants at the base.
The first ever citizen observatory for El Salvador was created on Monday by around 50 farm associations from the coffee region of Usulután. The move, the farmers said, was in an effort to defend the environment against the impunity they claim multinational companies enjoy when operating in the country. The organizations represent about 30,000 farmers with their families living in the region. In the past, they used to tell us the winter was bad because God wanted it, and we bent our heads down. Now we don't. What is ending our lives are the ill practices of multinationals, they added.
Palestinians held a funeral for a 21-year-old youth killed by Israeli forces in the Jenin refugee camp in northern West Bank. Hundreds of mourners on Wednesday marched from the Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan Mosque of the refugee camp where the young man was shot dead. Israeli forces attacked the refugee camp earlier in the day, killing Iz al-Din Walid Banikara, who reportedly was shot in the chest, Ma'an News Agency has reported.
Thanks, Lena and Gary. And you've tuned to Radio Havana, Cuba. Don't forget that you can listen to us on the FM dial if you're here in Havana. We're at 102.5 FM. That's on the FM dial, 102.5 FM. We're on Facebook as well. You can follow us on Twitter and you can like us on Facebook. Time now for our regular Thursday feature. It's the Economic Report with Eduardo Gonzalez. Eduardo.
Many thanks,
friends.
representative of Cuba and Japan recently asserted in Havana that the existing cooperation prior to the agricultural sector contributed to boost the development of rice growing in the central Cuban provinces. Toyozo Tanaka, leading expert of the project for the expansion and spreading of technologies for the production of certified seeds or DITESA of the Japanese International Cooperation Agency or JICA, explained that tasks performed made it possible for the seeds to meet all quality standards established. A priority was to train farmers involved in the activities in Cienfuegos, Villa Clara, Santo Espíritu, Ciudad de Ávila, and Camagüey provinces, where nearly 50% of rice production on the island takes place. He pointed out in a statement to the local Asian news agency. Elsie Gonzalez, Director General of the Kiwa's Brain Research Institute, assured that work relationship with JICA also facilitating the transfer of technologies and deliveries of equipment and resources for farming. He specified that the discipline and seriousness of Japanese experts factors that also have influenced the impact of the results of work in the country's rice production. Bilateral cooperation began in 2003 with a development study in the aforementioned central provinces. The French wine company Medozan des Grands Crus Bordeaux expressed interest in marketing its products in Cuba and take advantage of the local growing tourist market. A report by the company, which is considered one of the major French wine producers, reiterated its intention to have an impact on the Cuban market following a recent meeting with directives and experts in the catering Cuban sector, according to the Prensa Latina news agency. The meeting included a wine presentation and tasting session at Havana's Hotel Nacional, in which Jean-Andrea Talao, on behalf of Hero Cuba Group, said that French company has a large offer of products. Hero Cuba is a firm to set up in 2013 to promote European businesses in Cuba. Not only wines, but also other lines of products as well. Lebanese business people have traveled to Cuba very optimistic, expanding trade horizons during official meetings and will take part in an economic forum of the Havana International Fair. The delegation, comprised of members of the Lebanese Cuban Business Council, was bid farewell in Beirut by the Caribbean Nations Ambassador here, René Ceballos, who wished them fruitful contacts with their peers. The visiting delegation included LCBC President Ali Kasma and Bruno Zahan, advisor of Lebanese Economy Minister Alain Kahim, who delivered invitation letters from Kahim to Cuban Council of Ministers and Vice President Ricardo Cabrizas, and Minister of Foreign Trade and Foreign Investment Rodrigo Malmierca, to participate to an economic forum to be held in Lebanon on September 29th. Then the state here, from June 3rd to 7th, Sahara also arranged with directors of the Chamber of Commerce of Cuba the signing of an agreement and a bilateral memorandum of understanding to promote exchange. Kasma and many other LCBC members were welcomed some days ago by Lebanese Prime Minister Tahman Zalam, who is very happy with this trip and the prospect that are open and support us to carry out the economic forum in September. The Lebanese business people met with Orlando Hernandez Guillen, president of the CCU, that is the Chamber of Commerce of Cuba, an entity that, along with the Center of the Promotion of Foreign Trade and Foreign Investment in Cuba, or CEPEC, arranged contacts and meetings. A workshop of the Regional Alliance for Soils for Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean to promote sustainable regional management of that resource took place in the capital. This workshop, from prior to the Soils Congress 2015, is an initiative by the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, aimed at analyzing the implementation plan of actions in the area between 2015 and 2019. Cuba hosted the International Congress on Soils June 3rd to 5th, convened by the Institute of Soils and the Cuban Society of Soils Sciences, the framework to declare 2015 of the international year of swings by the United Nations. During the event of Havana's conference centered a series of keynote speeches were given by distinguished scientists and four symposiums on the result of international trades in the Caribbean country. Among the main issues discussed during the forum, the genesis and classification of soils, humanics and science, their impact on climate change, fertility and nutritional plants, manage of nutrients, and analysis of soil and plants. Parallel to the event, there was an exhibition in which a group of scientific institutions, companies and specialized firms of the country presented and commercialized equipment, technology and services related to the campus. Tourism executives in Eastern Guantanamo Province presented more than a dozen proposals to be included in the U.S. Tourist Development Program during a meeting with officials from the Ministry of Tourism for Include. Cultural and natural options aimed at turning the province into one of Cuba's main tourist resorts were analyzed and raised during the debate. Luis Miguel Rubino, head of tourist product of Include, stated that Guantanamo's rich intangible heritage is the most authentic product that the province can offer to visitors. The Stone Zoo, located in this mountainous eastern region, is currently one of the most popular tourist options in Cuba, which a delegate for Netflix for her said. Recall, the province holds the largest number of World Heritage sites in Cuba. Mr. Rubino stressed that the Congress need to explore all possible options, taking into account the possibilities opened to this sector after the U.S. negotiations with Cuba. Guantanamo was a city marked by constant migrations, which was strengthened in the early 19th century due to the activity of French, Spanish, and Afro-Caribbean citizens. Countless immigrants whose influence has remained over time. For Radio Havana, Cuba, Economic News. I'm with it.
Radio Havana Cuba calls on its listeners to just take a minute to answer these four questions. Do you listen to us on the radio or on the internet? Where are you located? What shows do you listen to? And what would you suggest to improve our programming? Once again, do you listen to us on the radio or on the internet? Where are you? What shows do you listen to? And what do you suggest to improve our programming here on Radio Havana Cuba? Send your answers to Radio HC English at gmail.com. Once again, that's Radio HC English at gmail.com. Radio Havana, Cuba, your shortwave radio station here in the heart of the Caribbean.
Tune to Radio Havana Cuba time now for The Real Story, with The Real Story screenwriter, executive producer, director, and all-around nice guy, Dylan Jones.
Hi, Dylan Jones here, and welcome to this edition of The Real Story with Lena Valverde and Ed Newman. The new group of 16 Cuban physicians has just arrived in South Africa to join the 220 Cuban medical specialists currently serving in 8 out of the 9 provinces, mainly in the countryside. Why are the Cubans in South Africa, Ed?
On the 20 years since South Africa underwent the peaceful transition from apartheid to a constitutional democracy, considerable social progress has been made toward reversing the discriminatory practices that pervaded all aspects of life before 1994. Yet the health and well-being of most South Africans remain plagued by a relentless burden of infections and non-communicable diseases, persisting social disparities, and inadequate human resources to provide care for the growing population, with a rising tide of refugees and economic migrants.
Well, I agree with Ed, only to add that the local challenges of reversing the adverse health effects of complex post-colonial interacting local and global factors will be immensely difficult and will take many decades, especially in a world facing profound challenges since the 2008 global economic crisis.
How do you see the root causes, Lena?
Well, extreme poverty affects a large proportion of the population, particularly in South Africa, and health is predominantly affected by a lack of access to the basic requirements for life, which are clean water, adequate nutrition, effective sanitation, reasonable housing conditions, access to vaccinations, and good schooling.
And you, Ed?
Well, with the elimination of legalized racial policies, advances in South Africa during the past 20 years include substantial economic growth and an increased number of grants to the poorest and unemployed. Although the social grants have reduced absolute poverty, 45% of the population still lives on approximately $2 a day, the upper limit for the definition of poverty. More than 10 million people in South Africa live on less than $1 a day, and the so-called food poverty line, below which people are unable to purchase enough food for an adequate diet.
Worse still, relative poverty has become worse. The top 10% of South Africans earn 58% of the total annual national income, whereas the bottom 70% combined earned a mere 17%. These disparities, the widest in the world, are associated with what is called disease of poverty.
What do we mean by the diseases of poverty?
Well, primarily AIDS. South Africa, with 0.7% of the world's population, accounts for 17% of the global burden of HIV infection. The devastating pandemic affects the lives of individuals, families, and the entire population groups.
Tuberculosis is a close second to AIDS. South Africa has one of the worst tuberculosis epidemics in the world. Driven in recent decades by the spread of HIV infection, the incidence of TB has increased to more than 950 per 100,000 in 2012. The TB burden remains enormous. Multi-drug resistant tuberculosis accounts for 1.8% of all new cases of tuberculosis.
How are doctors and other health professionals responding to these realities?
Well, the national public health sector in South Africa, staffed by some 30% of the doctors of the country, remains the sole provider of health care for more than 40 million people, who constitute approximately 84% of the national population. Approximately 16% of South Africans, about 8 million people, have private health insurance that provides access to health care for the remaining 70% of the doctors who work full-time in the private sector.
Also, in recent years, permission for senior full-time staff in the public sector to spend a limited proportion of their time working in the private sector has diluted their public service activities. Many of the state hospitals are in a state of crisis, with much of the public health care infrastructure run down and dysfunctional as a result of underfunding, mismanagement, and neglect.
So what is the reaction to the Cuban doctors serving in South Africa?
Well, South African officials are anxious to strengthen the National Health Service with experienced professionals until the 2,500 South African young men and women who are studying medicine here in Cuba return home to South Africa. They hold a great deal of esteem for the efforts deployed in that country by the Cuban doctors, who work day and night with the welfare of the South African people in their hearts.
And on a positive note, thank you both Lena Valverde and Ed Newman for your contribution to today's edition of The Real Story. For Radio Vancouver, I've been your host, Gerwin Jones. Until next time, ciao.
The impact of climate change in the world increases every year. Temperatures rise, rainfall patterns vary, icebergs and snow melt, and average sea level increases.
If we do not act quickly, environment degradation will get worse and cause greater global issues. Climate change, common challenge to the world.
And you tune to Radio Havana, Cuba. Don't forget to listen to us on Real Audio. We're streaming Real Audio online on our website, www.radiohc.cu. The It's the World Wide Web, www.radiohc.cu. You can also listen to us on the FM dial if you're here in Havana at 102.5 FM. And you can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Time now for some more news. Let's go over to the news desk. We're joined by Lena Valverde and Gerwin Jones.
The European Union joined Latin America and the Caribbean in calling for the United States to lift its decades-old economic blockade of Cuba as leaders of the three regions ended a two-day summit in Brussels. Top officials from the nations making up the community of Latin American and Caribbean states, CELAC, and the European Union also welcomed the recent efforts by Cuba and the United States to re-establish diplomatic relations. The EU and Cuba are scheduled to hold another round of talks in Brussels next week in a bid to normalize their own strained ties.
European, Latin American and Caribbean countries have vowed to help secure a global deal in Paris to curb climate change. In Brussels, leaders from the 28 EU countries and 33 Latin American and Caribbean nations in the CELAC bloc also pledged to work together to achieve a legally binding global climate agreement that is needed to keep global warming below 2 degrees Celsius or 1.5 degrees Celsius when they join a global summit in Paris in November. In a bid to deepen investment and trade links with the region, European Commission head Jean-Claude Juncker said Brussels announced during the recently concluded CELAC EU summit a total of more than 800 million euros, that's $900 million, in support for the 33 nations.
Hundreds of opposition and pro-government protesters took to the streets of Quito on Wednesday evening, staging two high-tension parallel demonstrations in the central Chase Avenue, which at nightfall began to turn violent. The TV network Telesur witnessed bottles being thrown at supporters of the Rafael Correa government, and former Country Minister Paco Velasco was bleeding from the head after being struck. The pro-government demonstrators gathered in front of the headquarters of the governing party Alianza País around 4 p.m. local time, blocking the opposition protesters from reaching that point.
U.S. President Barack Obama has authorized the deployment of hundreds of additional forces to Iraq in an effort to advise and train local forces to regain areas lost to ISIL Takfiri terrorists. Under the plan, the number of U.S. training sites in Iraq would increase from 4 to 5. U.S. forces are currently conducting at the Al-Assad military base in western Anbar, but the new base is closer to Ramadi in the eastern part of the province.
Chileans marched again in various cities of the country on Wednesday to protest against the education reform promoted by the government of President Michelle Bachelet and to defend their program of student movement. They plan to hand to the Ministry of Education a document listing various strategic demands they want to have included in the reform.
A major fire has reportedly broken out in central occupied Palestinian territories near the site of Israel's nuclear weapons production. The fire engulfed the Rotem Amfers chemicals factory near the city of Dimona on Wednesday, near the Negev Nuclear Research Center. Israel is reported to be manufacturing its nuclear weapons in the Negev desert, where the research center, roughly 13 kilometers, 8 miles, southeast of Dimona, is located.
African leaders have signed an agreement to create a free trade zone covering 26 countries, spanning from South Africa's port city of Cape Town to the Egyptian capital city of Cairo. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, and Tanzanian Vice President Mohamed Bilal inked the pact of the tripartite free trade area during a summit in the Egyptian city of Sharm el-Sheikh on Wednesday. The signing of the deal came after 5 years of negotiations aimed at easing the movement of Kurds in the area with a population of 625 million people.
Talks have resumed in Berlin on reaching a peace deal between Libya's two rival factions. The North African country has been torn apart since the NATO intervention 4 years ago, with two governments claiming authority and scores of militant groups controlling territory in between. UN envoy Bernardino Leon said after months of talks, Libya is out of time to avoid a resolution.
Pope Francis has authorized a new Vatican panel to judge bishops accused of concealing or not preventing child sexual abuse within the church. A Vatican spokesperson unveiled the new mandate, Father Federico Lombardi, told reporters. The thing that is new is that a specific procedure is now indicated for these questions that may have to do with the bishop's abuse of office. The tribunal's establishment marks Pope Francis' most forceful action to date in confronting child sexual abuse by clergy and meets a key demand sought for years by victims and advocates.
FIFA has suspended the bidding contest for who will host the 2026 World Cup following the corruption scandal that's thrown the world soccer body into turmoil. FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valcke announced the decision. He said it was nonsense to start any bidding process for the time being. Probes are underway into where bribes influencing the awarding of the next two tournaments to Russia and Qatar.
And that's it. We're out of time for today, but you can join us here tomorrow, same time, same station. We'll have more news, we'll have views, we'll have features, as well as great Cuban music. With Elena and Gerwin on the news desk, Jose Pepe Costa Pupo with the controls, and Anabel Fontanella, our artistic director. I've been your host, Ed Newman. Tomorrow on our English language broadcast, it's our Friday feature, the Caribbean Outlook Show. That's right here, on the radio, Radio Havana, Cuba, mañana. Thank you.